Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This is Oreo Cookie from Oakland, California, and it's plain to see, can't change me, because I'm going to be a roaster for life.
Good to see you, Oreo Cookie, at the Doobie Awards. And Spadoni and Loveman in for Vontae Hill and Joe Shasky on the Morning Roast. Be sure to download the Odyssey app. 95.7 The Game, thousands of other stations, and millions of podcasts are free on the Odyssey app. Sports talk, music, news, great podcasts like Frog Fries and Baseball Guys are all available. All your favorite teams, like the Niners, Warriors, other stations, radio shows like Steiny and Goo, The Morning Roast, pregame show. Catch amazing interviews you missed too, like when Steve Kerr joined Dan Devone and Lorenzo Neal yesterday when they filled in for Willard and Dibs. So yeah, download the Odyssey app. It is freaking amazing. Just like Nick Friedell, who's going to be joining us at 8:30, our Odyssey NBA insider. He's got the Odyssey app downloaded. He's tapped in. And all guests on 95.7 The Game appear on the River Islands guest line. Is it time for you to discover the islands, River Islands? One of the great laughs and voices in just Bay Area radio history. Cousin Nick Friedell joining us at 8:30. But we've been talking about a lot of Warriors, a lot of NBA versus NFL. We got some hot stove in there. You know, it is that weird time of the year, right? And it wasn't a weird time of the year this time last year because the 49ers were good. We knew the 49ers were going to be a legit Super Bowl threat. And now we know they're not even going to make the playoffs. They're done. Their season's over. The regular season anyways. But they still have something to play for, right? I mean,
the downfall is near and it's coming hard.
I'm looking at Monday. And I get it. We still have all day Monday to talk about it. But I do want to take a segment here. Maybe a few minutes, if you will. And we'll get back to the Warriors and your, you know, if you could describe the Warriors season right now, like how would you, like if someone to tell you what the Warriors are, who are they? I don't know. Who are the Golden State Warriors? You tell me. 888-957-9570, because right now they look like the same team as last year. But in regards to the San Francisco 49ers, Sam Lubman, what have they got to play for here coming up on Monday? Going up against the top dog in the NFC, the Detroit Lions, who want to have that number one overall seed. It's them. It's the Vikings. I think the Eagles kind of shot themselves in the foot last week. Jalen Hurts goes out the concussion. They lose that game in dramatic fashion against Jaden Daniels and the Washington Commanders. I wish they went back to the football team. But what are you looking at here, these final few games for the San Francisco 49ers, Sam Lubb, and specifically Monday, when you're going to be on Monday Night Football, the whole nation's going to be watching you. Is it Brock Purdy? Is it Kyle Shanahan? Is it Deebo Samuel? Is it Nick Bosa? What are you looking for this Monday night in at Santa Clara, I should say. I almost said in Detroit, but it's going to be Santa Clara.
I think really, if you're the Niners, you're doing anything you can to set the next season up for improvement on this year. It's just so many things have gone wrong for this team, Spadoni, where whether it's the injuries, whether it's money problems, it has been a year from hell for the 49ers. And I think if you could, this Monday night is your last chance to get something really positive out of this season. If the Niners somehow upset the Lions on Monday Night Football, like that's a win that you can kind of use as a jumping off point for the 2025 season. It lets the rest of the football world know that we may have been down this year, but we are not out. And I do believe that this season mirrors in a lot of ways that 2020 season that was injury filled and nothing went right. Guys are going down left and right every single week and they could never get anything going consistently. And the difference was, I think this is a weird thing to say, but this year's team is probably better than that 2020 team. But I do think, like, the year after that 2020 season, you saw them take a step forward in 2021. It wasn't a championship-level team. I mean, they did make it to the NFC title game, and I do believe that if they had won that NFC title game, they probably could have beaten the Bengals. But you saw them take noticeable steps forward in that season that set them up for great years in 2022 and in 2023. And I think that's what you want out of the season is what can you get out of these next 2 weeks to make you feel good about where the Niners are at heading into next season? Because you take a look around in this division, Spadoni, the NFC West is not very good. Like, the Seahawks barely beat a terrible Bears team last night. The Cardinals faded at the end of the year just like they always do. And you got a Rams team that, by default, is probably going to win the division this year. Like, the Niners so woefully underperformed this year. Like, the rest of the NFC West, I think, played exactly to expectations. The Niners just played woefully below their expectations. So, yeah, let's just see if you can use Monday night as a jumping-off point for a turnaround in 2025.
That all sounds well and dandy, but the fact that you were the worst team in the division when everyone else wasn't that much more impressive than you is kind of alarming for me. Like, that makes it even worse in a way, and I understand what you're saying, where you can be like, oh, well, you can look at it half full or half empty. Half full is, well, you had a down year and those teams weren't that much better than you, or you had a down year in a down year for all the other teams in your division, and you were still the worst team.
I think that's what a down year is. I mean, there's a down year for the
New York Giants being 2-13. Okay, we suck. We got a direction like...
Well, yeah, but they had no expectations going into the season.
No, they didn't have any expectations.
Like, this going was into their season. Expectation was to get the number one pick. The Correct. Giants are having a great season in that sense.
I just think the expectations were to go to a Super Bowl again after losing one. I just think we were wildly underestimating just how difficult that was. Just because, and Shasky was talking about this yesterday, Sam Lubman, I know you were tapped in. He was saying Warriors fans think it's their birthright to be in the Western Conference Finals. Like, no, I've been used to it the last decade plus. Like, Niners fans think it's their birthright to be in an NFC Championship game under Kyle Shanahan. No, they've just had some good success under Kyle Shanahan in recent memory. It's not their birthright to be there. Just like this season, like, the Rams were a better team. They fought through more adversity than the San Francisco 49ers. At one point, they were what, 1-4?
Yeah.
Come on.
And then they got everybody healthy.
Puka Nacua was out. Cooper Kupp was out. Matt Stafford was thrown to guys I hadn't even heard of. Denarius Robinson. Denard Robinson. Who? I don't know who that is.
DeMarcus Robinson.
Exactly.
8-8-9-5-7-9-5-7-0. Who was that Rams receiver?
There you go. And now they're going to probably finish the season at 11-6, and they had a good year. And you know what? I like their chances in the NFC because I'm not that big of a believer in the Lions. I'm a believer more in the Eagles and what they've been doing. I know they had a bad loss last week after losing Jalen Hurts. Kenny Pickett came in the backup. He was whatever. But I like what, you know, and their chances, the Rams, if they play a team like the Lions or even a team like, you know, the Minnesota Vikings, who they played early on this season. I damn sure like them more than the Falcons or the Bucks at this point, although I'm a little more bullish on the Bucks than I probably should be, even though they had a bad loss last week to the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday Night Football. But the expectations right now for the 49ers are fascinating to me because it all stems and it all goes back to the quarterback at the end of the day, and Brock Purdy and his relationship with all the other receivers on that team. And yeah, I say receivers because tight ends involved in that. And obviously it's a great rapport with George Kittle, who Brian Baldinger said was the MVP of this team right now when he joined Sam Lubman and Jake Hutchinson earlier in the week.
Like, there's so many different ways to get the tight end the ball. And you can run your offense. You can have your play sheet and all. Like, you should have a separate sheet in that play sheet. And we all know, color-coded, number 85. These balls are to get the ball to Kittle. I don't care if it's 3rd and 10 or it's 1st and 20. I can get Kittle the ball. And they're doing it to him more frequently. He's the MVP of the team. You know, I mean, and the guy plays his heart out. He's excellent after the catch. He's excellent with the ball in his hands. He punishes everybody that has to try to tackle him. There's no reason why George isn't targeted 10 times a game right now.
So that's Brian Baldinger, R95.7 The Game, NFL insider, and our Odyssey NFL insider, and obviously former NFL offensive lineman. Baldy's breakdowns, best in the business when it comes to that. So I'm looking at Brock Purdy's rapport with his receivers and building off that these next two, specifically with one Ricky Pearsall. Can they do anything going forward? Can they do anything? Can the real Ricky Pearsall please stand up? Like, is this the real Ricky Pearsall? Is it a lost season for him? like, it's been such a tumultuous season. I'm not trying to, you know, underplay and push down just how of a crazy season it's been. He's got shot, okay?
He only had the three practices before the year. I don't know if you heard Tony Romo mention that 417 times.
Very odd that Jim Nantz and Tony Romo were doing a game of that caliber, which meant absolutely nothing, to be honest, but it just goes to show you all the good games that were on Saturday compared to Sunday that weekend. But
last week was a pretty rough season.
Correct. Yeah. The Eagles and Commanders game, probably the best of the bunch.
Yeah.
But to your point, and more to the point, as Ray Ratto would say, Ricky Pearsall, we never got to find out who he was this season. And if anyone deserves a redshirted season, it's probably him, just given what he's been through. Like, I'm not redshirting Nick Bosa for having an okay season. I'm not redshirting, you know, Brock Purdy this, because you know what? A lot of us wanted to find out who Brock Purdy was this season if he didn't have all those weapons around him and if everything wasn't going according to plan around him. And we did find out who he was.
It's not good.
He's not a top five quarterback. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay not to be Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Patrick Mahomes, and tossing a fifth guy in there that he's not. It's okay not to be those guys. But we found that out this year, that he needs things to be right around him. And one of those things that needs to be right ending in the next season is that relationship with Ricky Pearsall. And your boy Baldy, Sam Lubman, spoke to that as well.
He's got a great feel. Zone versus man, where to go, where to settle, and the quarterback's got a relationship with them. I don't feel like there's any relationship between Brock and Ricky right now. Like, there's just this built-in kinetic sense between the two. The way I see even Malik Nabers, all the different quarterbacks with the Giants, Brock Bowers, all the different quarterbacks. Like, you can see that there's this effort to get those guys the ball, and they're all going to have 100 catches plus. But I just don't see the play calls, and I don't see the connection with the quarterback right now between him and Ricky. And so you go, well, what is he? I honestly don't know. Is he truly a number one pick? I thought so coming out of Florida, like he was at the very bottom of the first round. But regardless of where he's taken, like, he has to have more production than what we're getting, period. When you're taking that high and you lose your number one receiver in IU, like, there's got to be more production from him based on just his measurables, what he did at Florida, all this stuff, and you're not seeing it. So what's my takeaway? I feel like it's just an incomplete year. Like, you know, it's like that grade that you don't get a grade. You know, it's just incomplete. We got to wait and see.
I agree with Baldy there. I do think this is an incomplete year for Ricky. The guy had three practices before the year. He was dealing with a shoulder injury. And then, again, as we've said numerous times on this station, he was shot before the season. The fact that he was able to suit up and play as quickly as he did is a borderline miracle, really. So, but what I want to see these next two games, Spadoni, is let's force feed Ricky Pearsall. Let's just force him to either rise up or crumble here, because you have the stakes are non-existent, really. If you lose, you get a better draft pick. If you win, you get to feel good about yourself. So the Niners are kind of at a bizarre win-win situation, so to speak, in that you could take positives from either result. But I want to see more Ricky Pearsall, because after he had those two illegal formation penalties on Sunday, which I learned later on, one of them was actually on Kittle. The Revs just screwed that up. But he was pinched for two illegal formations in a four-play span, which is like, you can't have that happen. That's stuff they teach you in freshman football. That just reeks of a team that is not focused, not locked in, not buttoned up. And you could probably point at the coaching staff for that. But after those two penalties, which, you know, basically took a touchdown off the board for the Niners, Ricky was not targeted for the rest of the game. And for a young receiver trying to build up confidence, that's very detrimental there. And we know how hard Kyle Shanahan is on receivers. We saw with Brandon Ayuk. Ayuk got to a great start and then spent a year in the doghouse. And I would hate to see Ricky go through that next year for whatever reason. So let's just use these next two games and just let Ricky run. Let Ricky run wild. See what he could do. And build up his confidence going into that 2025 season.
Force feed Ricky Pearsall. Like, if anything, like, I get it. You want to win the games. You're trying to be like, and I'm not saying don't try to win the games, but try to win the games by also just trying to elevate and try to, you know, see what you got and Ricky Pearsall. That's what I want to know. I don't know what, and Baldy even, like, he's speaking on it. He was really high on him coming out of Florida and obviously ASU prior to that. He was really high on him. I just don't know what they have in him, and that's just the frustrating part, I think, for 49ers fans right now, is they just, if anything this season, you felt like this could have been a year where something positive, like,
well,
for example,
yeah,
the Raiders this year stink. They're a bad team. They're going to be a top five pick team, probably. They're going to be looking for a quarterback. The one positive to come out of this season was their first round pick. Brock Bowers is probably the best tight end in football as a rookie. And listen, he's up there, and he's one of the best players in college football. So maybe it's not a like for like comparison, but
he's been incredibly dynamic for them.
That's a positive to take out of this season. What are some of the, what he is? Correct. What are some of the positives right now to take out of this 49ers season heading into next year? I just wonder right now what they are. Dominic Pooney, okay.
Pooney, I think honestly there are a lot of positives. And,
oh,
well, not a lot, but not a lot, but there are some solid positives that. This is not a completely, you know, bunk loss season. You got a lot of young players in Renardo Green, Malik Mustafa, Dominic Pooney, who D. Winters at times has shown some value.
That sound Isaac Garendo. Okay. Dominic Pooney's the only guy of all those you mentioned.
He's probably going to have a great career. But those other guys, I mean, those are going to be solid, very good, solid you know, players to put around your core going forward. Ryle Green, I think, has been a very good cornerback considering he was taken in the third round. Malik Mustafa looks like he will be at that safety spot for a while. D. Winters is going to be a great linebacker complement to Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw next year. And I do believe Dre Greenlaw will be back next year. And you want to talk about a positive. It was a short time on the field. Dre Greenlaw looked great, especially in that Rams game. And I think he showed just enough to that to kind of show that he will hopefully be back next year as close to his old self as he could possibly
be. And to your point, real quick, not to interrupt Samuel, the 49ers are shutting down Dre Greenlaw.
That's understandable because I don't think they need to push. I mean, the fact that he's even on the field, guy tore his Achilles and then was back on the field in the same calendar year.
Pretty
like,
crazy.
Think of the story of the journey that Klay Thompson went on to get back to the court after his torn Achilles, and Dre Greenlaw playing a much more physical sport, much more physical position, and much more intense level of play. Not to take a shot at Klay there.
Well, Klay also had the ACL, but yes, I know.
But yeah, it's ridiculous just that Dre. The fact that you're even talking about Dre getting back on the field was crazy to me. And then I saw him on the field. That was crazy. And then I saw him dominating on that field. And it just blew my mind. So that's a positive, I would say, is the fact that Dre Greenlaw's recovery looks like it's going very, very well. So you got young players who did not stink. You got a guy in Dre Greenlaw who looks like he'll be coming back better. So those are positives that I think you can sit back and say, I like that. But the big positive you needed was, I think, when Brandon Ayuk went down, that should have been Ricky Pearsall's time to step up and fill that void. And it just did not happen because Ricky was not present at training camp. He was not able to get into a groove. And when you miss training camp and you got to use the regular season to play catch-up, like, you're basically playing catch-up all year long. And that's for veteran players. So think how much harder it is for a rookie. So that's why I want to see, just give me a bunch of Ricky Pearsall these next two games. So that way we can at least get some semblance of an idea of who he is as a player. Is he a burner? Can he get off press man coverage? What kind of a route runner is he? Like, this is the time to get those answers on Ricky and find out, was this an incomplete lost year for Ricky Pearsall? Or was this it started off bad, but we salvaged something at the end to make us feel good kind of year for Ricky Pearsall?
And to your point, I think Juwan Jennings probably a positive here. Your third wide receiver heading into the season ended up being your number one wide receiver thus far, although he's cooled off a little bit in recent weeks. Deebo Samuel's a guy I'm looking at. What do we do with Deebo Samuel? He had a good performance against the Dolphins. It was his best performance in God knows how long on the season. He has 50 receptions, 665 yards, and 2 touchdowns through the air. That's the one that's frustrating for me, because you say you wanted Ricky Pearsall to be that guy to step up for Ayuk. I wanted it to be Deebo Samuel to step up after this season for a guy that didn't do much in the Super Bowl, obviously battling injuries, but when is he not battling injuries, it feels like? For a guy that's known as a gadget player at this point, to have not honed in or, you know, rectified or polished any of that route running ability. The guy's been in the league for how many years now?
2019 is when his rookie year.
5+ years. He's been in the league now, and he's still a gadget guy? Like, that's what's frustrating for me, is I've seen the growth of a Brandon Ayuk. I've seen the growth of a George Kittle. I've seen growth with Juwan Jennings. stepping up this season. I just haven't seen that growth from Deebo Samuel from his rookie year till now. I thought he would have gotten better as a route runner. And maybe that's just something you don't get better at, but you... And I'm not here to call him out that he's not practicing and he's not working at it. I'm sure he's working at it very hard.
He's a very hard worker, yeah.
I just feel like I see these guys coming in and year out. That was supposed to be what Ricky Pearsall hung his hat on, route running. He worked with Brandon Ayuk. They were teammates at Arizona State. You just thought some of that would rub off on Deebo Samuel this year. And I am curious to see what his future is going to be with the 49ers going forward. Are they going to keep him? Do they need to keep him? Because you don't know if you're going to have Brandon Ayuk at the start of next season. That's another thing you got to juggle with. Because Brandon Ayuk, yeah, he tore his ACL, but he's also got other damage, that other ligaments in there that is torn up, and he might not be there at the start of the season. Real quick, I want to hear from Baldy, and then we're going to get some of these calls. Shameless shout-outs in 7 minutes, 888-957-9570. Shameless shout-outs, 7 minutes. Shout-out whoever and whatever you want right here on 95.7 The Game. You can also text them in on the Comcast business text line. It's Spadoni and Lubman in for Bonta Hill and Joe Shasky. Getting back to the quarterback, though, real quick. Here's what Brian Baldinger had to say in regards to some of these interceptions that Brock Purdy has thrown as of late. Well, they might not all be on Brock.
Honestly, I remember 1 year, Sam, when Eli Manning led the league in interceptions. And I went back and watched the whole interception reel. I think there was 16 or 18. I forget the number. But like on every single, almost every one, the ball was tipped. The route, you know, Jeremy Shockey ran the wrong route. I mean, you go through it and you go, not all of these are Eli's fault. But I never heard Eli complain. I never heard him say anything about the interception. Like, sometimes you just have to take it. You have to say, it's on me. Regardless, if you get hit, smacked, if there's a common theme here, well, you got to protect better. The quarterback, honestly, has to just take it in strides. You never put an asterisk next to that interception saying, well, if Zach Sealer didn't hit him, he probably makes that throw across the middle where they want to attack.
888-957-9570 is the number. That's Brian Baldinger talking about. You know, maybe not all of Brock Purdy's interceptions are his fault.
Well, it's interesting you play that cut there, Spadoni, because the question I asked there was basically I look back at some of Brock's most egregious interceptions, especially the ones in the fourth quarter, and there were four specifically that stood out to me. There was the one against the Cardinals at the end of the game where they had, the 2 minute drive that, was intercepted on like the second or third play of that drive. There was the Chiefs game where about with 9 minutes left, they're down 21-12. They're driving into the end zone. Brock throws that interception in the end zone that kills any chance the Niners have of getting back into that game. And then there was the interception of the Rams game and then the interception in that Dolphins game this past Sunday. What all those interceptions had in common was that Brock made the throw with the defender basically in his lap, because either Jordan Mason against the Cardinals or Colt McKivitz in the other three situations neglected to pick up his block, or just failed to pick up his block, or was just beaten by his guy. The one on Sunday was a stunt move where I'm spacing on the guy's name, the defensive tackle stunts in onto the Brock's left side, which was being protected by, I think, a guy in the stands and their fifth string tackle. That's how bad it was.
It was me out
and
there. You can just
basically, yeah. And so in that situation, like, what's Brock supposed to do there? I mean, I think you just kind of have to try and hold the ball there and take
eat
the
it.
Sack.
Yeah, you eat it.
You have to eat it there. But when you're basically already throwing the ball and that's when the guy's hitting you, it's happened so often that it's just, and all those balls, they were poorly thrown balls because he was hit when being thrown there. Now, it's very easy to say Colt McKivitz, who, only one sack allowed this year. Colt McKivitz has had an awful year. Like, let's be real, he's been terrible this year. Part of the reason why Brock's cardio has been up every game is because Colt McKivitz has been a swinging door at right tackle. It is just like, McKivitz's numbers would be a lot worse if Brock didn't have the mobility that he has. So, yeah, it just in that situation, it's hard for me to truly pin that on Brock, but you're the quarterback, so you got to wear that. And, there's nothing wrong with that. Quarterbacks are supposed to wear those mistakes because that's what happens in your QB. You have to go that extra mile and take that extra punishment there.
Speaking of,
but it is a nuanced view of the struggles of Brock Purdy.
Not to cut you off, speaking of quarterbacks wearing things, I have ESPN on in the studio, and I don't know what Cam Newton is wearing.
Cam's done up today.
No, he is Barbie meets football. on full display.
You ever see that movie Wild Wild West with Will Smith and Kevin Kline back in 1998?
Way back when.
Yeah.
Toys at Burger King, I think.
Yeah, he looks like he would be like the bad guy from that, but like if also Barbie was.
Was it like Dr. Lovelace or whatever? Yeah, that's what
Dr. Lovelace or something. Yeah,
there you go.
Chris, those some elite toys from McDonald's when that movie came out.
There you go. See, McDonald's, Burger King, I was one of them. Chris in Concord wants to join in the conversation. 888-957-9570. What's going on, Chris? You're on with Spadoni and Lubman on The Morning Roast.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I was just going to kind of chime in a little bit about something I'm kind of excited about this year. And to be honest, it sounds like a lot of you guys over at the radio station aren't stoked on Brock Purdy. You look at his numbers compared to last year, you know, yardage is not that far off. Interceptions aren't that much different.
I'm happy with Brock Purdy.
The one thing, though, that really stands out is that, you know, the yards are there. The touchdowns aren't there. But you take away all of his weapons, and that's what you kind of get. So with everybody coming back, it's good or it's almost safe to assume that he's going to produce next year.
That's Chris in Concord, 888-957-9570.
It's an okay assumption.
Okay. Well, again, who is Brock going to be throwing the ball to next year? I know it's going to be George Kittle. At some point, you hope it's Brandon Ayuk. I know Ricky Pearsall is going to be on this team.
Debo Samuel, Juwan Jennings.
Juwan Jennings will be there. That's a pretty good foundation. Mm-hmm. That's pretty good.
You're probably going to have Trent Williams back.
Yes. And hopefully, yeah, obviously Trent's going to be out for the season. Hopefully everything's going to be going well with him. Obviously.
He needs to be at training camp next year, which I think he probably will be.
I would hope that he's not going to do another contract, holdout just for another. Yeah. I doubt that's going to happen.
I asked Baldy, because I asked Baldy straight up, because I have this feeling that the better move might be to move off Trent Williams because he's going to be making $21 million next year. And if you can't count on him to be there for all, the entire season, why pay him all that money? Maybe you could find, a better option in the draft or maybe move to Jalen Moore. I asked Baldy about that. Here's what he had to say about Trent Williams.
If you said to me right now, we're going to get 14 starts out of Trent. If we're going to get 14 starts, because there's going to be some nicks and things that happen when you're that age, I'd sign up for the 14 starts and take them. Like, I would take what he gives you in those 14 starts, I would take that. Now, he's been, like, this is a little unusual for Trent since he's been in San Francisco, this amount of time that he's missed. He's had other ankle injuries and things. Every injury is a little bit different. But if I knew right now that I could get 14 starts from Trent, I would take it.
So that's where things are with Trent. Then I followed up that question. We don't have his response, but I followed up by asking, your thoughts on Jalen Moore. He said he's basically a backup. So the whole idea of maybe a move off Trent for a draft pick or for Jalen Moore, I think we could scrap that. You're probably expecting Trent to be back at left tackle next year, which if he is still the Trent Williams we know and love, which it sounds like he probably could be, I'm okay with that. So that's what's going on there. So I do think, you're going to have your foundation back there. You're going to have a little bit better protection on the offensive line. I do think the Niners probably need to focus more on offensive line help in the draft. So depending where they fall, either another tackle to replace Colton McKivitz with, or I think they need to go find a nice center as well, which the good news there is, you don't need to have the highest draft pick to find one of those good linemen. So I think, when you have a better offensive line, you're going to have your weapons back. Hopefully Brandon Ayuk will be back healthy. I'll be honest, I think we're leaning a little too heavily on Brandon Ayuk coming back healthy and ready to go next year. Realistically, we should expect some bumps there a little bit as they reintegrate him into the offense.
I mean, hell, he's going to miss training camp probably. He's going to be playing as. It's almost going to be like Ricky Pearsall coming back,
which
you
got
to treat
again,
like
we're
that.
Talking about
not that he's a rookie, but just
he's not going to have training camp to get
think
ready.
About how much rusty he was this past year, coming off of a second team All Pro season, missing training camp. All that he did, it wasn't like he was lighting it up prior to that. No. He was getting booed.
That Pats game, it looked like he was finally becoming Brandon Ayuk again. There's a question mark there. The big question is running back, though. Like, I don't know about you, Spadoni, but I am very nervous about what we're going to be getting or not getting out of Christian McCaffrey next year.
Jordan Mason, I think, was holding it down but prior.
He's an unrestricted free agent, though.
Hey, bring him back. Why not?
Or is there maybe a opportunity out there to get more snaps? Because when you're playing RB2 on the Kyle Shanahan offense, you're not getting a whole lot of snaps. You're going to be sitting behind Chris McCaffrey as McCaffrey gets run into the ground there. So is there a situation out there for Jordan Mace where I could go there and maybe it's not going to be a Super Bowl contending team, then with the Niners of that is a different conversation from this. But maybe he can go somewhere where he can be a starting back or at least a 1A back instead of sitting behind Christian McCaffrey. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I would not be shocked if that's kind of a thought process that goes through Jordan Mason's mind.
Well, it's going to be interesting because they obviously spent the draft pick on Isaac Garendo, and you know he's had some moments.
He's
looked very good. I don't know if he's to the level of, you know, a Christian McCaffrey at any point. That's way
out
of there.
If he's running back two behind McCaffrey.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Because I don't even think he's at the level of a Jordan Mason yet. Like, and that's the consistency. But he's a rookie. Can he get better? And that's another player these final few games, right? Like, is it going to be Patrick Taylor Jr.? Is that the guy that we're going to be leaning on? Just so many damn injuries with this team. We don't have the injury report just yet. That's coming up in 10 minutes. But we do have shameless shout-outs, Sam Lubman. And we're going to get to that here in a second. Just a second.
It's Friday.
Yeah, I'm a shameless, horrible human being.
Your chance to shamelessly shout out whoever or whatever you want.
I need to shout out somebody. I forget their names. Mm-hmm. They would know who I am if they're listening.
It's time for shameless shout outs on the Morning Roast.
But I'm exhausted.
You know you make me wanna kick my heels up and shout through my hands.
Oh, it is time for shameless shout-outs. Time to shout out whoever and whatever you want. You heard the voiceover guy. Spadonian Lubman, 888-957-9570. Hit us up via call, via text, via YouTube, via Twitter. By the way, you can follow me, shameless plug here, at @Spadoni_Joe on Twitter, X, whatever the hell you want to call it. If you want to shout out Sam Lubman.
You know what? I'm gonna give a shout out to Coach Jim Larrañaga, the now former head coach of the University of Miami men's basketball team, who announced that he was stepping down yesterday. I think we can get into that on the other side, Spadoni, because he had some very interesting reasons as to why he stepped down.
That's a 10-minute tease right there,
The NILs and how they've affected college basketball. So we'll get into that on the other side. But before we get into that, though, I do want to give a shout-out to Coach L, because he has been probably the greatest coach that University of Miami has ever had in men's basketball, which is not really saying a lot. Miami never really been a proud basketball tradition outside of Rick Barry. He did a lot of great things for
the great Shane Larkin, all right?
Hey, Sugar Shane Larkin. He was a classmate of mine at one point.
Whoa!
Knicks legend.
Wow!
He said like five words in that class.
Barry Larkin's son, Hall of Famer Barry Larkin's son.
But, yeah, no, Larkin was on that 2013 team that Coach L took to the ACC title, one of the most fun college basketball seasons I ever got to experience. We stormed the court against Duke that year when we crushed them. They were number one in the league. He took this program to very high highs, but there was, I think, he had a lot left on the table, or that he left on the table. They wasted the year of Lonnie Walker, which really frustrated me. He was the highest-rated recruit that the Canes ever got, and they didn't even make the tournament. And now, unfortunately, his greatest moment will always be, you know, ending the Warriors now. So shout-out to Coach L. And I always remember he came into my sports journalism class to talk to us one day, and I just thought that was the coolest thing ever, the fact that he would take the time to come and just chat with us. Just a great guy that didn't have the success that I think we wanted, but still a very, very respectable and successful tenure as the men's basketball coach at University of Miami.
You know who I want to shout out, and I am grateful for, because it's a season of giving. It's a season, you know, to be appreciative of what you got, what you have, because a lot of people don't have a lot. But we as a society should be appreciative and grateful for LeBron James and Stephen Curry. Like, I mean, watching.
I thought you could just say LeBron there for a second.
No, well, yeah, to that extent. But again, I know where we're talking. I know we're broadcasting. I know we like to hail LeBron, but we're going to miss this. Like, the battle they had in the regular season last year, what was it, double overtime or whatever it was?
That was right, an insane Saturday night game. I was there for that.
You were there.
Was
I was supposed to go, and me and my best friend Keenan were like, it's going to be a whatever game. No, it was ended up being the game of the season, one that you'll never forget. And obviously that one ended in heartbreak for the Warriors, just like this one on Christmas Day ended in heartbreak for the Warriors. But just to watch LeBron making the three, Curry making multiple threes, the dishing, that just... Everything that we have come to know and love when it comes to those two players, what we've seen this summer where they were teammates, you saw the embrace prior to the game even starting. Whitley Sandretto, the great digital engineer for us, she is locked and loaded when it comes to all things Golden State Warriors content. She does a hell of a job. And she had that video of LeBron trying to block Steph prior to the game when he was warming up. They embraced, they gave a big bear hug. It was just fun to watch, and it was exciting. And Steve Kerr spoke about Steph and LeBron yesterday, and if the Magic and Bird comparison kind of holds true.
I got a lot of memories of my childhood, you know, growing up rooting for Magic and watching the Lakers and the Celtics play in the finals. And those were amazing days, iconic days. What we've seen from Steph and LeBron, particularly meeting in the finals four different times, you know, they are basically the Magic and Bird of their day, for sure. I mean, just not only brilliant, you know, all-time players, but charismatic, you know, showmen. Everywhere they go, people are, you know, they're coming to the game to see those two. That's pretty unique, and also unique to see the rivalry that, you know, turned into them being teammates this past summer in Paris, and for me to be there and observe that was just incredible.
That's something we dive into on the other side at 888-957-957 as well. Where do we rank this Steph and LeBron rivalry? I don't think it's up there with Magic and Bird. That is maybe the greatest rivalry, maybe in all of sports, what Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, because that went back to the college days as well, Sam Lubman, and then being the number one pick, Magic winning it in his rookie season, being the finals MVP in his rookie season. There was so much layered into that. But LeBron and Steph, we should be appreciative of just what they've been able to do. 510 on the Comcast Business Text Line. Shout out to Cam Newton, the gangster of the London boarding school circuit. I love that.
That's a good one. Shout out 650. I'm not reading your shout out, but shout out to you anyway for at least trying to text something in. It's something gross and inappropriate. You know what?
Thanks.
One more shout out, though, since we're shouting out Cams. Let's shout out Cam Ward, because you know what? Dude was a Heisman finalist. He doesn't have to play in the Pop-Tart Bowl. He's going to be going in the top five of the draft. He might be wearing that silver and black next year. Let's seriously hope so, because nothing would look cooler than that silver and black number one Cam Ward jersey. But my guy, suiting up for the Pop-Tart Bowl tomorrow to take on Iowa State, put Brock Purdy U down in its place. Mm. You'll love to see it. They're playing in Orlando, too, so I expect a big turnout from the Miami Hurricane faithful, since it's literally like a five-minute drive.
It's a home game for them.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Iowa, I mean, I don't even think they have cars up in Iowa, so how are they going to get down there?
Wow, the shot!
There you go. You know, hopefully it'll be raining, so I know those Iowa State QBs can't throw in the rain. Oh, yeah. Knocking all the names out right now. So
speaking of rain, is it going to be rain in the forecast on Monday? Let me check that right now. Levi's Stadium.
Oh, no,
it's going to be sunny, everyone. I think it's going to be okay.
Woo! Dodge that bullet there. Shout out the sun.
I think that'll do it for shameless shout-outs, and that's going to lead us into the injury report, Sam Lubin, whenever you are ready.
It's time for the injury report.
That really hurt.
Brought to you by Boxer and Gerson, Northern California's premier workers' compensation offer, helping injured workers get their lives back for over 40 years.
Oh, boy, and we were just being appreciative of Stephen Curry and LeBron James and the Warriors. I know, John. I know it. The Warriors will be playing tonight without Stephen Curry. The Warriors announced that Steph will miss tonight's game with the Clippers due to rest. The rest of his knees, I should say. Steph has been dealing with bilateral knee tendonitis this season. And with the Warriors looking at a back-to-back this weekend, head coach Steve Kerr wanted to give the 36-year-old point guard a chance to rest his legs. It is Curry's sixth missed game of the year. The injury report was brought to you by Boxer & Gerson, Northern California's premier workers' compensation law firm, helping injured workers get their lives back for over 40 years. What's coming up in the game is brought to you by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. And we got Nick Friedell joining us, courtesy of the River Islands Guest Line at 8:30. We'll dive into the rivalry that is Stephen Curry and LeBron James. Where does that rank for you? Is it the greatest rivalry of this era? We can go NBA, we can go NFL, we can go Major League Baseball for that matter. Is it the best rivalry, hell, of this century? Let's just go. 888-957-9570, plus what Jim Larrañaga had to say as he's stepping down, and what it could mean for the future of college sports. It's Spadoni, it's Lubman, it's the Morning Roast, it's 95.7 The Game.